And welcome to the Rock and Roll Survivors Podcast, dedicated to those in front of the curtain, behind the curtain, and somewhere in between. So let's get started.
Evolution, well, you know, we all want to change the world. But when you talk about destruction, don't you know that you can count me out?
Don't you know it's gonna be
alright? Alright. Alright. You say you got a real solution. Well, you know, we don't love to see the plan. You ask me for a contribution. Well, you know, we all do. But if you want money for people with minds that hate, all I can tell you is, brother, you have to wait.
Don't you know it's gonna be
alright? Alright. Alright. Change your head. You tell me it's the institution. Well, you know, you better free your mind instead. But if you go carrying pictures of Chairman Mao, you ain't gonna make it with anyone anyhow.
Don't you know it's gonna be
Well, Patty Quatro, welcome back and hello, my dear.
Oh, we're back. And I can't wait to drive this car to more excitement with our foot on the gas, Detroit style.
Detroit style, as indeed. And I want to pick up exactly where we last left off, which was that the Pleasure Seekers had come back to Detroit in the fall of 1968, after having been on the road touring for close to a year. And you come back home to Detroit, you recognize immediately that rock and roll and the sound was changing and shape-shifting with other cultural waves. Pat O'Day, the concert promoter who you met on the three-month stint in the Pacific Northwest, was still in your ear about where music was headed. We also spoke about how the Pleasure Seekers decided to leave Mercury Records, a very bold move, and to start writing your own original music, which you did, two songs called Elevator Express and Gotta Get Away. And equally as important, we touched upon the fact that the Discotheque Arthur, which we had talked about when you played in their New York venue, had opened a franchise in Detroit. So I want to get to all of this as we continue to talk about the last few months of 1968, because We really have big changes continuing to come, Patty. So, as you do so well, why don't you set the scene for us and tell us about this new franchise in Detroit, Arthur? It was very well known and very popular by the time it got there. So, go for it.
Absolutely. Arthur Disco was in downtown Detroit, in fact, very close to Motown offices, which made that convenient to the Motown artists on Washington Boulevard. Arthur featured a wide variety of bands, including many of the homeboy bands played there, like MC5, Mitch Ryder, Bob Seger, Alice Cooper, Glenn Frey's band. We were popular there and played there more than once, and it was a hangout for bands to mix with Motown and the homeboys. It was great opportunity. And it was jam day on Saturdays. So that's when Motown acts did their thing and came in and had fun. And it was indeed a franchise of the New York City Club. And it was opened by Sybil Burton, Richard Burton's ex, and actor Roddy McDowall. The routine was fun. We would do five sets. And in between each one of our sets, the DJs would play for a half hour. And there we were at the end of the night, running to change so that we could get out on the dance floor and dance for the last half hour. And we started there on October 29th for our gig, and it was a crazy time leading up to the holidays.
Wow. Oh, but what fun, crazy fun times. And it is, as you said, it's 2 weeks before Thanksgiving. So I just want a fun little side note. One of our wonderful listeners, John Dayton, said that the club Arthur was named after Ringo Starr's hat. So I laughed at this little bit of trivia because yet again, there's another tie-in with the pleasure seekers and the Beatles. Somehow you're laying it. Ringo Starr's hat called Arthur. So you were also continuing to garner, I mean, this is just an ongoing theme with you, garner glowing reviews from the press, which we again have so, far too many to read. But one teen writer, as she was called, for the Detroit News, was a big fan of the Pleasure Seekers and wrote about you throughout the decade of your tenure as the Pleasure Seekers. Her name was Sharon Cassidy, and there are a couple of things in an article that she wrote upon your return to Detroit that I want to pick up on a little bit more depth, excuse me. She writes, quote, "Back in Detroit now, the pleasure seekers who have appeared at Gilly's South in Miami and Trudy Heller's and Arthur in New York are headlining at Arthur in Detroit. They just finished taping two songs, Elevator Express and Gotta Get Away," close quote. It goes on to read, quote, "Operating expenses are higher for a girls' band than a boys' band, too. Quote, we have to put a lot of money into costumes and living expenses," says Pat. You're still Pat here. And then, quote, "Guys can squeeze the whole group into an $18 a night hotel, but girls need a little more comfort," close quote. Sharon Cassidy goes on to write, quote, "Girls also need a man with them at all times for protection." Now, just on an aside, I normally would chide her for this comment, but in your case, it was true that you needed this protection. And she goes on to say, in the pleasure seeker's case, the man who fills the bill is Leo Fenn, Arlene's husband. Most of the hurdles have been met now, however, and the pleasure seekers have their eye hopefully on the future. They want to be the first girls band to make music at the top. Quote, we want to prove girls can do it, they say determinedly, close quote.
Oh my God, Leo, the panty raid protector. Oh my God. Sharon was quite supportive and very complimentary, always on her press. She'd written quite a few articles, as you mentioned. That's funny about the girls in hotel rooms. I mean, can you see five girls trying to cram into one bathroom mirror? No, it wasn't going to happen. Of course, we needed room to glam up. So, yeah, we were fussing about our rooms.
You know what? In your case, I think you should have been fussy. You're on the road for a year. Why would you have to? I'm sure male bands did that too, but that's a long
It is.
time to go without creature comforts. And so,
No.
one of the things that Sharon Cassidy said in this article, which I, and this again is an ongoing theme with the band, is this steadfast determination that you want to be the first girl band to make it to the top and you want to prove girls can do it. And you clearly have been, but you're still on that mission. And I want to remind everybody, including myself, that with this determination comes a lot of consistent and intense work and practice. This was your
Oh.
time of paying your dues. You're slogging along. You're forging your unique and pioneering path, but it wasn't always easy. For example, during this time frame, as you said, Patty, you were booked at Arthur 5 sets a night. In addition,
Oh.
you're doing press still. You're doing TV shows still. And now you're going into the studio to record 2 original songs, which means you're writing original music during the day. So walk us through what was happening during this, as you called it, crazy time.
It
And
was.
also it was this incredibly short period of time. Within days, all of this was happening. So tell us about it.
It was intense, you know. I mean, what did we do? We slept, ate, played, back to sleep, you know, slept, ate. I mean, it was the routine. But this week, we had a press interview on the 29th when we started, and we played at night. Then Wednesday, we recorded at Pioneer Studios in Detroit, a professional studio. We did the 2 original songs that we had been able to finish, Elevator and Express and Gotta Get Away. And that was like an early collaboration of Susie and I and Arlene. And then Thursday, the very next day, we 10 a.m. were up and taping a TV show. Tom Shannon, which aired in the Midwest area. He was a popular DJ and personality. And then we played again at night. And the show was called Buffalo Bandstand, and it was aired over an entire Midwest area. We did a cover because we didn't have the tapes from our recording session yet. So we did Reach Out, I'll Be There. Then Friday, another press interview, play at night. Saturday, another TV show and play at night. Darlene went bananas, having to set up her drums for the TV, for the recording, and then having to redo it at night. I mean, she was a busy little gal. It was so busy for us. Intense week.
Intense week and also lots to unpack here. So you said you did two, I just want to clarify, you did 2 performances on the Tom Shannon show.
Yes.
So the first one, was it prior to you going into the studio? Is that why you said you didn't have tapes yet?
Yeah, we did the recording first, and that was very unusual for him to have a band just a couple days later, again, the same band on his show. But he had heard about the songs and he wanted to be the one to debut them. So he brought us right back on November 2nd. I mean, there we were again, taping another local TV show.
That's incredible. And so, to clarify, on the second appearance on Tom Shannon, because you said you did the first one, Reach Out Live. So, a
Right.
few days later now, after you've recorded your original songs, Elevator Express and Gotta Get Away, he brings you back. And so, you now have these songs on tape. So, did you perform these songs live or did you lip sync them?
I'm pretty sure that we lip-synced them. It was one of our first times to do that because we always played live, but we had these great new tapes. So I think that was our experience that we did it, you know, lip sync.
Was it difficult to transition over to lip syncing?
No, we knew the songs good. You know, it isn't that hard to lip sync. I mean, you have it in your, you know, you have the sound and everything and you're just moving along with it. No, I didn't find it hard. I don't know about the rest of the girls, but it went very easily and he was very appreciative that he was able to debut the 2 songs on
I
his
bet.
show.
I bet appreciative, but we also have to let the listeners know, as far as we know, there is no survivor tape of this at all, whether it was the
Oh,
first performance or the
drive
second.
crazy. Do you know how it frustrates me that we have so little video? That was the way of it. I mean, for God's sakes, they didn't even save Dick Clark archives. They would tape over them. Dick Clark, for Christ's sake. And those local little shows, they would retape over them. They just didn't keep them. Or they're unavailable. The family holds them like gold and they won't let anybody have them. So, yeah, we only have a couple videos. They're posted and everything, but that's all we got.
Oh, that's so disappointing. But again, it was a different time and era. Tapes were
Yes.
expensive. people at the time didn't necessarily know the legendary status of Dick Clark that would happen decades later, but it's like that must be so frustrating.
It
So,
is.
again, more to unpack here. This is all happening in the span of a few days, over a few weeks. I mean, all of this is just boom, boom, boom before Thanksgiving, and it's overlapping and it's accelerating. And so it's now October 30th, and this is where, and this, you were kind of not out of order, but this is in between now songs of Tom Shannon performances on TV, right? But you go into Pioneer Recording Studios in Detroit. And I have to say, what a fitting name for you and your pioneering
Oh
all
my God,
female
yes.
band.
Oh, is such a coincidence, that
It's
term.
or serendipitous to me. I love that. And let's remind the listeners that the Pleasure Seekers, with the encouragement of your manager, Leo Fan, and again, your musical guru, as I'm calling Pat O'Day now, you had severed ties with Mercury Records. So you were without a label, which
Yes.
also meant that this was out of pocket that you were paying for this, but you were determined. So before you and I talk about your first song, Elevator Express, and the lyrics and the music, what was it like for you? Band leader Pat walking in to the Pioneer Studios, knowing what was at stake. I mean, you'd already recorded before. I get that. But this is different. What were you thinking walking in there?
Well, it's interesting when you bring up the other recordings. I mean, Golden World, and then The Hideout, we were very involved, doing that song. So we had that experience of collaborating and putting it together. And then the Mercury thing, same thing. And then we did that one Vanilla Fudge in New York on our own. It was just a mixing guy in the studio, and we were directing what we wanted. So it wasn't that difficult of a stretch for me. I was ready to do it. We were excited. We knew the songs inside and out. And we were so happy that we were going to have two representative of our first originals, of that type that we did all on our own at the end of the session. So we were excited more than anything. It was a usual studio setup. Pioneer was a real professional studio. So we had the mixing guy and the pleasure seekers. That was it.
Well, you bring me to a question, another question. So when you recorded Light of Love and Good Kind of Hurt for Mercury Records, your producer was Dick Corby, who had been the talent scout, if that's what we're calling him, who saw you at Trudy Heller's in New York. But he was no longer at Mercury either. He left after it had sold to Philips. So who was producing you at Pioneer since you were without a label now and without a producer?
The pleasure seekers. We did it ourselves. The mixing guy, just taking down what we were laying down, and he would give us a tape at the end of it. If we had to start over or something, it was within the band that we would say, no, let's do that again or whatever. We did it. We were the producers of those two. Leo didn't know music that way. It wouldn't be Leo. It was just the girls.
Oh, I love that. You are just such a bona fide rock star, Patty. I mean, you're writing your own original songs as this all-female band, and now you're producing your own songs. I mean, it's just another pioneering aspect, and just incredible. Okay, so producer Pat, once you were okay with the sound, you got the tapes, right? Is that how it worked? You didn't press it into a single. So,
No.
right? So tell us about the tapes. Anything you want, do you remember? Did you have to make copies about them? Anything you want.
Of course. I'm sure Leo made a few copies to send out to labels and stuff. That, in those days, you didn't make a disc and stuff. It was on tape, and people would listen reel to reel. That was what they listened on way back then. So that's what we had, tapes that you could put on a reel to reel, a label could listen, and that was it. Simple.
Leo putting together press packages would include a
Yes.
copy of the tapes
Yes.
because usually any kind of record, recording studio, management, whatever, had reel-to-reel players there
Of
for this
course.
very reason. Absolutely. So, as mentioned, we're going to talk about Elevator Express in depth. And to let the listeners know, that's going to be this episode. And then we're going to pick up on Gotta Get Away on the next episode. So tell us a little bit about the song. But before you do, I want you to talk about this is your first attempt again as a band to write original music. And I think when the listeners hear this, they will hear it's quite complex and moody for a freshman or fresh woman attempt at songwriting.
Yeah.
So talk to us a little bit about your efforts with this song.
Well, this was so early. Susie and I worked on it. Arlene helped arrange it and stuff. I was more into the music at that point, you know, and Susie was more into lyrics. She'd been writing poetry since a young age. So, but it was like you were collaborating, you know, we worked on it like as a group. We also wrote together and apart as we started writing more songs. You know, it evolves. It's pretty organic for the way it all happened. We weren't in the mood to write a la 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 love song by any means. No, not the pleasure seekers. The words indicate that, as you'll see. It's more about a hunger to stake a claim in one's life and make something of yourself. It was pretty much a medium tempo and worked really well for the song. We were real happy with it.
Before we have you just read the lyrics, because I want to talk about those. It's interesting, speaking of themes, more themes for the pleasure seekers. You talked about Golden World and the single you did with Dennis Coffey and John Rhys Ens. And
Yes.
that was a co-written song. And we talked about this many moons ago and many episodes ago. But this original song was called Long White Line. And it was
Oh.
very much this attitude of, I'm going
Yep.
down the highway. Follow me if you want to, but if you don't, I'm fine without you. So you had
Right.
already had this attitude. And then with Dave Leon, with Hideout, you co-write What a Way to Die. And that's
Yeah.
also this idea of you're fine, babe, but unless you're a cold bottle of brew, I don't need you either. So this attitude continues. And now
Oh,
your
my God.
first attempt to write a fully original song with Elevator Express, you take a stab at this whole attitude as well and to take on what's going on culturally. So read us the lyrics, Patty, please.
Okay. Look at your friends. Are they enough? Do you want to show the world your stuff? There's a much bigger stage if you're tough enough. Come along with me. Let your mind be free. Then the next verse. The lines are long, the rush never stops. Crowds all around trying to get to the top. Shove your way through, now the fight will begin. Come along with me, let your mind be free. Then the last verse. At every floor, doors open wide. They can't get you off, no matter how they've tried. Numbers grow higher, and you're still on that ride. You can make it now, baby. The feeling's inside. Come along with me, let your mind be free. I mean, same attitude. We never dropped our attitude, you know? It's just the way it is.
Oh, the attitude is fully there. I would say the only difference now is that it is late 1968, and this whole idea of freeing your mind and this whole attitude of thinking outside the box, if you will, although that expression hadn't come out yet. But I want to know, when you were writing these lyrics, I mean, there's so many interpretations of it, but what were you thinking and hoping to convey with these lyrics?
Well, you said something clever a second ago about how the cultural shift and all that. Interestingly, when I look back, we wrote this song before we heard the Amboy Duke song, Journey to the Center of Your Mind, which has that same thing about it. You know, I find it funny how one of our hook lines was, come along with me, let your mind be free. I guess we were in good company with Ted Nugent as he wrote his next. To be honest, I think the lyrics started to show the directions of our inner growth, and thoughts began to be expressed in these first lyrics. It's a bit clever to me. The most important thing is that it was called Elevator Express. Isn't that what we were attempting to go up that elevator and keep going higher and higher and express ourselves now with our own voices? That was our mission. However, I think at the inception, Susie's psychology plays into it. She's crystallizing, as we've talked about, making her stand in the world. So, you know, interpretations can be different as you're writing, what's in your mind, your perception. From Susie Sausage to an entertainer to be reckoned with, the seeds are growing inside her. You know, for example, do you want to show the world your stuff? There's a much bigger stage if you're tough enough. That is so Susie, just the word tough, you know? Very different on how lyrics resonate with all of us. Susie making her stand, me More the band mission. That's how I looked at those lyrics. Interpretations can be very different to each person. And my thoughts were more on the music and the possible chord progression, you know, dee 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 dee, bow, bah, you know. I mean, I was into the music. So, and Arlene brought in such a groovy sound to meld with her straddling the two genre. You know, she was a couple years older. And she was a little more pop and going heavier, which she loved the heavier stuff. And she helped with the arrangement, the things that she added. So it was a happy, happy session.
Oh, brilliant. I also just want to remind everybody, Susie is 18 years old. You're 20 years old. Arlene is a few years older than you are. But in terms of your approach to this song and the sophistication in terms of the meaning, and I think that is what resonates with a good song is how, who the listener, or let me say that differently, how the listener hears it. Does it resonate with them personally? But I also look at this as you're saying a band leader, because are you tough enough? Can you make it in this business? Susie talking about, you know, her how she was perceived when she was younger, being called Susie Sausage, and I'll show you. I just and Elevator Express, I love the way you talked about that, going up, up, up and expressing yourselves and wanting it now. So, Patty, I just love this. So as we close out this episode with Elevator Express, what do you hope we, as your old fans, your new fans, and the listeners who will be hearing this now for the first time after you, co-writer Patty Quatro, wrote this song, what do you want us to listen for with this song? What do you hope that we'll hear?
Everything we've been talking about in this episode, from how we were approaching the song and trying to convey within our more groovy sound and graduating into a heavier sound. Now, all of this is coming to life in this song. We were able to get it down on tape exactly how we envisioned and heard it. The excitement is there. So, what do I want you to hear? The organ starts the song out with this very exciting organ run motif, like an elevator going up quickly. That's what I want you to hear. Then the vocals come in with such a heavier lyrical attitude. Listen to the intensity of what we are saying here. I loved that song. It was in octaves. That was an unusual thing to do, but then broke into harmonies for the hook lines. I loved those touches that played the octaves back and forth on verses and then to harmony on the hook lines. So it wasn't one lead singer at all. Listen for the harmonies that we Quattro sisters were known for. What I want you to hear is the construction of the hook line, raising the excitement, going up again, like an elevator each time. There was a drive to the vocals, producing excitement on the harmony hook lines that comes through mimicking that elevator motif. Because we raise the end of the line, you know, let your mind be free. We go way up. So it mimics it. I want you to hear the extra line to the last verse that cleverly brought the song to the next level in excitement by prolonging that last verse with an extra line. It's a little trick sometimes done in songwriting. It shows our early intuition in constructing the song. And finally, Arlene did such a cool lead and completely goes into a different tempo. It was a risky experimentation for Arlene to do. And for all of us, it worked beautifully, melding her previous, you know, affiliation with more pop, different thing with the heavier intent of the song. And that's what I want you to hear.